Now I'd like to welcome our opening speaker for the 24th retreat. I'm going to give you Jenny D. from the Wild Recovery Group of Narcotics Anonymous out of the East Bay area of North California.
Hi, everybody. Hello from the West Coast. I'm an addict. My name's Jenny.
Hi, Jenny.
Hi, I just want to take care of a couple of housekeeping things first. I want to say a big thank you so much for having me here. Thank you. I think it was Kelsey I spoke with who invited me to come and share. And we had such a great connection and a great chat. So thank you, Kelsey, for giving me this opportunity. And thank you to my friend Jason, who is also on the call, who connected me to Kelsey. I did pray before when I joined onto this meeting to, my usual prayer and then to tell the truth. And then I saw my sponsor pop on and I thought, oh, okay, now for sure I'm going to have to tell you all the truth. I can't make up any stories to make them more interesting. So I love Pennsylvania and I had the best time at the World Convention there a number of years ago. It was great. You guys are wonderful hosts. And I have a good friend, her name is Jess from Pennsylvania, and I think she's actually going to be sharing with you tomorrow. And, she and I connected through a different World Convention, and she spent some time at my home. So I feel at home with you guys already. So thank you for that. I was told how long to share, so I'm going to do my best to get as far as we can with it. I really just want to ask really quick, though, anybody here who's new or returning and just want to put your name in the chat, let us know who you are so that we can make you feel welcome. I recently just went through a little bit of purging at COVID shelter in place cleanup, and I'm not quite sure why I have so many sixth edition basic texts in my bookcase, but I suspect it's because I'm supposed to give them away. So if there is anyone who is here today who is new and does not have a book, please put your name in the chat. You can private message me if you like, and I will mail one to you. Okay, so you guys, I'm so nervous. I'm working from home. The area that I live in is we have been shelter in place since March, and at no point since March has the county that I live in lifted any restrictions. So I have been working from home, and we actually went to shelter in place about a week and a half before the rest of the country did. So I am like itching to get the F out of here. But I have been working from home for a really long time. And today I have been on work meetings since 7:30 until 3:30 today. So I'm sorry. I'm going to try and get my head in the game and let my higher power do the work from here. I don't normally do this. And I'll say that when I see people at conventions, I'm so sorry if you're one of them. When I see people at conventions who come to the podium with their books, I think, oh my God, here we go, right? So I don't read out of the books when I share, but I am going to now. So I never say never, okay? If you get nothing from my share today, never say never. You can take that away. But because the theme of your weekend is the journey continues, I wanted to read a little piece of the Living Clean book, which if you don't have, you should definitely consider taking a peek at it. This is actually on page IX. It's in the introduction, and it's under the chapter 7, The Journey Continues. So I'm hoping this is going to get us all in, help me to stay on a topic. So bear with me. From the first time we find hope, we are in an ongoing process of spiritual awakening that can last our whole lives, if we are willing. Continuing to feel that recovery is alive, continuing to feel that our recovery is alive, requires us to keep growing. Isolation and complacency hold us back from freedom in ways we may have not even feel until we are stuck. Generosity of spirit is the antidote for loneliness and alienation. Being of service frees us into our own lives and opens us to the spirit of love that surrounds us. We experience unconditional hope and understand that there is no limit to how much better we can get. No matter how far we have come, the journey continues. So thank you for letting me read that. Nothing helps me to feel more connected than our literature. You know, our program is definitely in our literature, and you know, and everything else kind of happens in the fellowship and meetings. And I'm going to just share a little bit about what my journey looks like and how my journey to continue is very relevant, just like it was the first day I got here. On April 27th of this year, I had a COVID birthday, and I celebrated 20 years clean. And I had a big party planned and lots of fun, and, you know, we adjust. And I had a wonderful Zoom celebration instead from people from all over the world, and it was lovely. And I have a friend who says, don't leave 10 years before the miracle happens. And what I'm coming to find is that the miracle keeps happening. There are many miracles along the way. And so, you know, there was definitely one at, you know, 5 minutes, and at, you know, 1 year and 2 year and so on. And I'm certainly not remotely the same person that I was when I got here. I was 19 years old. I was a little girl and I was afraid of everything. And all I really wanted was to be loved and to fill that gaping hole inside myself that felt like it was never going to go away, and that my life would never be, my life would never measure up to that, to a life that was worth living. And I mean, I specifically remember, like, this desperation of loneliness before I got here. And, you know, my world got really small. I like I said, I was 19. I was first introduced to Narcotics Anonymous when I was 15. I went to meetings every day for 30 days, and I got drunk to celebrate my 30 days clean. So I wasn't entirely ready to be clean. Didn't really know what that meant. I came back and I knew where to go when I was 19, and I was done. And, you know, the irony is that I feel so much younger today at almost 40 than I did when I got here at 19. I felt really old, and I felt really tired, and I felt really, really hopeless. I had a one-year-old child who I brought to meetings with me. I want to tell you, I'm speaking to all of you, but I specifically want to say to any of the parents who are recovering here in the rooms, I support you. I stand behind you in needing to bring your children to meetings. It's okay if they make noise. It's okay if they're disruptive. We need you here. When there are kids in meetings, it means that parents are getting clean. It means that there are people who will affect other lives outside of these rooms and make a difference. And so please, please keep coming. And if you're a parent and you go to a meeting with a child, I know it's different now since we're all meeting virtually, but if you don't feel welcome, go to a meeting where you do. Bring a friend. There were plenty of women who didn't make me feel welcome. I remember one woman who came up to me and said that I either needed to stop coming to the noon meeting, or I needed to learn how to control my child, because he was crazy, okay? And he's almost 22 years old, and he's still hyperactive, energetic, kind of loud little person. I mean, big person now. But my son was being raised by a using addict. He didn't know what was safe, and I didn't know how to be a parent and teach him what was safe. I just knew that they said go to meetings. And so I went to meetings, and I brought my kid with me, and he chewed on the key tags, and poor OCD literature person who would perfectly lay out the IP pamphlets that didn't fit in the rack and color coordinate them. And they were like, nobody touched them. They're all perfect 90 degree angles. And then my kid would show up and he would mess all of them up and he'd color all over them. And there was all, you know, it was crazy. And I was sitting in a metal chair, sort of sitting on my hands, rocking back and forth, like, I don't know if I'm going to make it, right? I don't even know if I'm going to make it to the end of this meeting. And what happened for me was there were women, one of them was my sponsor, used to say, it's okay, honey, you're welcome here, but we're going to take your son outside and we're going to play with him so that you can be in a meeting and you don't have to worry. And I didn't even know that, right? I was like, these people are so nice. And my son would go outside and play and I would listen and I felt supported by these women. And so I don't know why this is coming to me, but I'm going to share this story anyway. You know, meetings were the only place that I felt safe. I struggled with anxiety when I got here. I struggled with anxiety for a long time. And, you know, if you're new, or even if you're not new, when, you know, it's such an oxymoron. We tell people to come here and to basically, you don't have to change everything. You don't have to change anything. You just have to change everything, right? And change your playmates, your playgrounds, and then start working the steps. And so let's do the first step and let's admit we're powerless and we have no control. And for me, it was like, what? What do you mean? I've been living my entire life believing that I had some element of control and that I knew what I was doing. And so, you know, it was like, stop using drugs, tell somebody else a secret, be cool with a bunch of strangers telling you they love you, and like, it'll all be great. And none of this made sense to me, right? Because I was like, I am not using drugs and I am more uncomfortable than I ever have been. And people are creeping me out. Like, I had people coming up to me, you know, we love you. And I'm like, fucking A, man. Like, you don't even know me, right? Like, what do you mean you love me? You know, like, and then like, I didn't understand stuff. So when the money was going around in the basket, I'm like, what is this Jonestown cult that they're collecting money from me? You know, like, soon this coffee is going to be Kool-Aid, you know, like there was all of this stuff for me that I just didn't understand. And we do speak another language, you know, we use recovery terms, and I didn't know all the terms, but I certainly pretended that I did so that I could feel like I was a part of. I don't know how it is in Pennsylvania, but we do this thing where sometimes we talk to newcomers like they're from kindergarten, right? Like, welcome, keep coming back, you know, it's okay. And that freaked me out. I was like, I'm like, whoa, you know? And really what I needed and what worked for me and what I did find were that there were people who were like, it's okay that you don't feel okay. And so I had this experience. I had, I think I had 9 months clean. I had 9 months clean. And like I said, I went to a lot of meetings. I went to a ton of meetings. I didn't work. I was afraid to leave my house. Everything scared me. And the only time I felt okay was when I sat in a meeting and I was still anxious, but I felt like I could suck it up. And I was like, oh, I know one person. I'd see someone's car in the parking lot and think, oh, I can breathe a little bit easier because I know this one person who's going to be here at this meeting. And so when we reach our hand out and we tell someone that they're welcome and when we give our phone number, you know, it really does make such a difference. It made such a difference for me. And then they said to take a commitment because commitments will keep you clean. And so I didn't quite understand the concept of a home group. I thought any meeting that you went to regularly meant that it was your home group. So I had 7 home groups. And because I didn't work, I went to at least 2 meetings a day for like the first 18 months that I was clean. And because they said to take a commitment, I was the coffee person. But it wasn't enough to be the coffee person at one meeting. So I had 7 coffee commitments. I had a coffee commitment every day of the week for every noon meeting. And where I got clean, you take all of the coffee stuff home with you. So at any given time, there were 7 coffee pots in my car, and I only drove a little 2-seater car. Also, I didn't drink coffee, but I figured that the coffee person was the most important person because everybody was drinking coffee. And if I was the coffee person and made good coffee, then that meant that you would like me and that I belonged here. So there was a woman who used to come to the noon meetings all the time, and she had a child who was the same age as mine, but she had like 12 years clean when I first got here. And her child was not chewing on the key tags and ripping up the eyepiece. Her child was very demure and very quiet and very well behaved. And she had a bag, right? This big old bag with like sliced carrots for snacks and coloring books and crayons and quiet toys. And I want to tell you that I was not one of the summer sicker than others, but I was when I got here. And so this woman who was caring really well for her child, somehow was this woman trying to tell me that I was a piece of shit, right? So she'd come with her bag and I'd think, who does this woman think she is with her bag of carrots, right? Like, she's just doing this to make me feel bad. She's doing this to make me look bad. And is she drugging that kid before he gets here? Because that kid doesn't say shit for 60 minutes. And my kid has literally ripped apart the vinyl on the chair by the time this meeting has ended, right? So like, what the fuck does this bitch think she, you know, she's trying to prove here? And so, of course, I talked about her, right? Like, I have my other newcomer friends, and I'm, you know, we're like, oh my God, that so-and-so lady with her bag, and she thinks she's all that, right? So at 9 months clean, I really had a hard time. And I don't say this to frighten anyone who's new, but it took me a long time to detox. I should have done it in a treatment center, but I didn't, because I had a child, but because fill in the blank. And, I was miserable. I was so miserable. And I felt like, you know, I didn't sleep for the first 4 months that I had been clean. I was really, really physically unhealthy. You know, for any women who can relate, you know, I'm 5'7" and I came into the rooms like 115 pounds. And I thought if I could just lose that extra 5, I'd be just right. You know? And I made myself sick and I was really unhealthy. And I kept drugs in my house till I had 6 months clean. Kept my drug of choice in my house till I had 6 months clean because I wasn't sure that this was going to pan out. And what if this didn't work? And I kept it as a backup. And so clearly I struggled with trust and acceptance and open-mindedness, all of the things, you know, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are 3 fundamental spiritual principles. I didn't have them when I got here. So I'm here to tell you, like, it's okay if you're not doing this perfectly. Just don't go anywhere. Just stay here. Just stay with us. I know that, you know, you may think that, you know, you need us. I mean, I need Narcotics Anonymous. I need you guys, but we need you. We need you. We need everybody to stay here. So when I had 6 months clean, I got really, really, really scared and I really, really wanted to use. And I had a moment where I thought, okay, I'm going to throw it away. And I'm just really going to give this NA thing a go. And I'm going to see what happens. And I never share this, so I don't know why this is coming up for me, but when I want to tell you that, like, I got rid of the stuff and that was the end of it. But this is the crazy thought process that I came into the rooms with. Okay, I won't put it down the toilet because then it will really be gone. So I'll put it down the trash. And even if I need to go digging out of the garbage, it's okay. Like, because it will still be there. So if I totally get rid of it, it'll be gone. But I don't, I remember thinking this through and thinking, okay, even if I have to take it to, like, the main garbage dumpster where there are, like, maggots, I'm still willing to go through the garbage and to fight through maggots to get whatever it is that I have thrown away here. That's okay with me. And I did go back to the garbage, except the garbage man had already come. And they were gone, and they were gone for good. And these are moments where it's like, okay, higher power, I'm here with you. Like, we're in this together now. And so I really struggled, and I didn't do a lot of step work, and I didn't do a lot of the things that were suggested. I didn't trust women when I got here. I have a really bad, I had a bad experience with my mother. It made it hard for me to believe really in any kind of relationship, let alone one with women. I thought that the women wanted my men, and I just didn't trust them. I didn't trust anybody. And so I married a man. I was loaded when we got married. He got clean first. He got clean in December, and I got clean in April. And I thought, okay, now he's clean, and this is going to solve everything. So we got married in February, and I remember being so loaded that we went down to City Hall and got married, and all I remember about it was that there was green carpet, and that was it. And I called my family on the way home from the courthouse or the county record place, and I remember my Nana said to me, "Oh, honey, well, there's still time for an annulment." Because I really thought that the problems that I had with this particular individual were going to go away simply because we had gotten clean. And just like, you know, we talk about here, the drugs are a symptom of our disease. There's so much other stuff that's underlining there. And so it was pretty miserable, and I didn't really have any girlfriends, and I had a sponsor. But most of the time, I felt like I was living this lie. And so 9 months clean, I go to my regular Sunday morning gratitude meeting, and I share that I just want to die. That is this as good as it's going to get? I'm clean. I'm miserable. Like, is this really as good as it's going to get? Because I just, like, I don't get it. You guys appear to be in, like, a snow globe of, like, happy, like, white people living life, and I am on the outside, and I just can't seem to get in. And what happened was, I opened up, I shared all this stuff, and the meeting was outside, and the woman with the bag and the child and the carrots, who knew I had talked about her, who knew I had gossiped, who I had not been kind to, because I was a 19-year-old brat. She came up to me in the meeting, and she put her arms around me, and she said, "Please don't go anywhere. We're going to love you till you love yourself." And I needed this so badly, and it was a moment for me where the light bulb went on, and I thought, oh, is this what they talk about? Personalities. That we put our, that we do what we need to do to love each other and to care for each other and support each other despite each other. That I had done nothing to welcome this woman into my life, and that I had, again, not been kind to her, but that didn't stop her from being kind to me. And everything started to change there for me. I started to really get into the steps. So I remember I was working my, I love the second step. The second step makes me really happy. I'm still, 20 years later, I'm still working out, like, my sponsor and her sponsor were still in a process of trying to figure out how to remove powerless from the first step. So when they figure that one out, I'm definitely jumping on board with that one. But until then, I remember the first time I worked my second step and I drove away from my sponsor's house. I stopped at a red light to drive home and I wanted to get out of my car and just start dancing around. I felt so free and I had not experienced that before. And to be honest, I haven't totally experienced that again. I've never actually worked a step and then gotten the results immediately. You know, we do the work and the results follow and we don't know when the results are going to follow. And when I did the first step, you know, in the second step, I think it's the basic text that says, you know, having worked the first step, like, has left us with a vacuum. And that is how I felt. I felt this emptiness of like, okay, I'm powerless. Now what? Now what am I supposed to do? Right? I don't know that I have a belief of a higher power. I grew up in a certain religion. I don't jive with that. Like, I don't know. I don't know anything. And so when I worked the second step, I was like, woohoo, I'm not alone. I can be restored to sanity, you know. And I think it's important. The language that we use is so important because it talks about like it's a restoration to sanity, right? Like, so that tells me, one, I have been sane before. And two, it doesn't say it's an event to sanity or it's an immediate, like, it's happened, right? It's a restoration, right? If I tear down a house and I'm going to restore it, you know, I have to lay the foundation and then I have to map out where the rooms are going to go. And then I have to put the drywall up and slap the paint on it. And like, so there's all of these levels when it comes to what it means to restore. And so, so my restoration to sanity has happened over 20 years, you know, the journey continues. And so by the time I got to the third step, I was like, oh man, I totally did this step wrong. And I called my sponsor and I was like, I got to do this step over again because, I don't feel it. I don't feel like I've turned anything over. And, the best experience I ever got is from a gentleman who has since passed away, who said, you know what, Jenny, the third step and the 11th step go together. They're like a couple living long distance. And you'll understand the third step better when you get to the 11th step. And that was true for me. And what I, again, you know, as someone who thought she was really smart when she got here, I learned that like, I just don't pay attention to the details. And so it didn't say that we turn our will and our lives over. It says that we made a decision to. And, I don't know about you guys, but like my decisions changed based on how I feel, right? I am totally willing to be of service when I am feeling good. And then when I've worked a long day and I'm tired and I'm like, oh man, I got to go back and make coffee again, right? Like but making a decision, you know, implies action. And so, and for me, that action meant that I was willing to keep going and that I was willing to believe that the journey continued. And we all talk about the fourth step being this big, scary thing. And, you know, I didn't have a good time writing on my fourth step. I haven't had a good time any time I've written on my fourth step. But something happened for me. When I had 9 months clean, I was writing on my four step and I called my sponsor and I said, hey, I'm not going to be able to, I can't do the steps anymore because if I continue to write on these steps, I'm going to have to leave my husband because I feel like I'm living a lie. And she said, you know what, honey, you don't have to make any decisions right now. All you have to do is just keep writing. And that was the perfect thing for me. And the truth was that I was married and I had this little boy and I kept thinking that my husband and I were going to make something work because now we were a unit and now we were clean and now it was going to be okay. But the truth was my husband was really violent and he was a GSR and I was the secretary, or I'd have the coffee commitment and he was the cake guy. And so it all looked really good. And after the Sunday morning gratitude meeting, we'd have barbecues and people would come to our house because my husband was part of a big sponsorship family. And I was always afraid when everyone would leave. And I wanted to hold on to the shirt tails of these people and say, please don't go. My husband beats me when you leave. But I didn't. And it was my sponsor that I called regularly, who would regularly meet me at the police station. And I had one, the last time that that happened, I remember being at the police station and my sponsor looked at me crying and she said, you know what, honey, I can't come here anymore. I can't meet you here anymore. She said, I'm afraid that he's going to kill you and I will have enabled that to happen because I've done nothing except just be here when this happens. And at that point, I was so scared for my child, and I was really scared to lose this person who seemed to love me unconditionally in a way that I hadn't experienced before I got here. And so I left my husband, and he stalked me for a little while, and it was really scary. And I mean, like, legit stalking. And I say this. I say this for the ladies, but I've actually had men who've come up to me once I've shared this and been like, whoa, I had such a misunderstanding about what love meant that I honestly believed, oh my God, he loves me so much that he is stalking me. I'll never find a love like somebody who loves me like that. And the truth is, I haven't found somebody who loves me like that again, and I'm grateful for that. If you do feel that way, please talk to somebody else. It's not okay. And so I moved out and it was just me and my kid. And somehow, somewhere along the way, I became the soccer, you know, team mom who brings the bag of cut up oranges and healthy fruit snacks and, you know, I'm like legit soccer mom. I've got the canopy. We've got the signs. All the stuff, right? I go to war with the Los Angeles Unified School District because my kid has special needs and he's not getting what he needs in school. I'm on the PTA board. And before I got here, I used to drop off. I used to roll out of bed in the morning. I'd drop my son off at daycare and then I'd go back home. And then I'd pick them up right before they close. And sometimes I'd be late because I was just using. And even while I was clean, I didn't know what to do with this little person. And I lived with such a guilt and such a shame that, like, I had no concept of what it meant to love and to be loved. And all I ever wanted my whole life was to feel like I'd fit somewhere and that somebody had me. And I couldn't give that to this little human that I loved more than anything, that I loved so much that it scared me, but I didn't have the equipment. And I remember it happened yesterday, watching my son sitting in front of the television, eating dry cereal from the box in a wet diaper, feeling like you are the worst human being on the planet. Like, how will you ever make this okay? And that over the course of time, again, our journey continues. It doesn't arrive. It doesn't end. I learned from the moms in the room how to be a mom and how to be on the PTA board and how to fight for my son. And, you know, he's almost 22 years old. And I say this, like, I mean, my kid's a pain in the ass. Don't get me wrong. He's almost 22 years old. And he's very stubborn and he's 6'5". So it's like really hard when you're like standing on a chair telling your kids to go clean his room. It's so like demoralizing. But my kid, like, I'm his favorite person. He knows what it is to be safe. He feels safe with me. I've got him. He trusts me. I'm the first call for good news. I'm the first call for bad news. I'm it. And I didn't know that that's what I was going to get when I got here. I just didn't know what the fuck else to do. I didn't know that all of these gifts and all of this gravy was going to come. And so, you know, I changed sponsors. I started working the steps. I got back into service. I had a few years clean. I worked the sixth step. That, to me, is the step that separates the men from the boys. That step kicked my butt and continues to kick my butt every time I work it. I have a friend who says, if you feel uncomfortable while you're working the sixth step, then you're doing it right. And I remember calling my sponsor and saying, who could ever love me? I'm so defective. You know, so of course I added victim to the list of my sixth step. And I became of service to the World Service Conference, and I met somebody and I fell in love. And because I like to do things really hard, I couldn't have fallen in love with someone local, but I fell in love with the regional delegate from the United Kingdom. Also, I was afraid to fly. And we had a relationship for 2 years, long distance, and he would come and visit me. And I thought, this is the person, for the first time, that I feel like I don't have to apologize for being who I am and that I am worthy of love. And he moved here and we got married. And there was no green carpet. We got married in the backyard of my first sponsor's house, and we were surrounded by people that love us. And we had a really good life for a long time. You know, he was my fairy tale Englishman. And in the process of our marriage, we learned how to be intimate with each other and what it meant to work the steps in a relationship together, what it meant to believe that there was a higher power that oversaw our relationship, that it wasn't just what Jenny wanted and it wasn't just what my husband wanted, it was what was best for us together. And, you know, more than two-thirds of the way into our marriage, it became clear that my three younger siblings needed a place to go. My brother was really sick. He has a heart condition, and he was really, really sick. And my husband and I made the decision that we were going to take him in and we were going to give him the best quality of life for the last little bit of life he had to live. He was 15. And when the Department of Children and Family Services came into our home, they said, hey, you can keep him, but also there's two other kids in your mom's home, and we've got to take them too. So either they're going to go to foster care or you're going to take them. And so we looked at each other and said, we're going to take them. And we thought that this was like maybe going to take 6 months and that my mom is mentally ill, was going to get some help and get things together. And that 6 months turned into a 2.5 year long court battle with 27 different social workers and police who came to my house on a regular basis, that finally they were like, we've been here. I know this place. And I thought, this is it, man. This is harder than getting clean. And overnight, I have four children. And I don't know how to do this. And people would say to me, you're amazing. You're so great. This is so wonderful. And I felt like such a phony, because I had no idea what I was doing. And I didn't even know if I wanted to do it. I just knew that I couldn't not do it. I mean, that's the thing. Sometimes we stay clean because, not because we want to stay clean, but we just don't want to use, right? Like the desire, for me was to give these little lives a place that was safe. And I didn't know that by bringing them into my home and loving them and tucking them into bed and holding them when they cried and said, I know it's wrong, but I want to go home. And when are we going to see our mom? And why is this happening to us? I didn't know that when I help these children, it would heal a piece of me that I knew was broken, and I didn't think that there was ever any hope for it to be repaired. I didn't know that by supporting someone else, I would heal my own wounds. I didn't know that that the 2 years before when my sponsor said, it's time to do a four step on your mom, that work would enable me to have let go of so much stuff so that in 2 years time, I could go to court and I could do what was right for these kids without fear of this person not loving me or whatever it is. But this is what I mean about, like, we do the work and the results follow. Sometimes they don't fucking come for a long time. And so the work that I have done in the rooms has enabled me to change my life and the lives around me. Like, I talk about sometimes, you know, you drop a pebble in the pond and like it ripples out, and like we never know how far these ripples are going to reach when we get here. And like, I just thought, man, I just don't want to wake up tomorrow and it feels the same as it did today. And that's really all I'm shooting for here. Also, I'm going to keep drugs in my house and talk shit about people, right? Like, I'm going to do all of that. Like, I didn't know that that would mean that 20 years later, I will have learned how to be a mother to my own son, to have watched three other high school graduations, to have had moments where I sit on my couch and I listen to my children in the kitchen arguing over who's doing the dishes, and it brings so much joy into my life. I didn't know that, like, when my body said, hey, I'm sorry, but like the shop is closed and you can't have any more children, and now we're going to have surgery, so that will never, ever happen for you again, that 3 days later, these children would be placed into my home. And I remember my husband saying to me, you know what? You were always meant to be a mom. That's always been your role. And I had the opportunity to do that because I was clean. And raising four teenagers is a hard freaking job. And my husband and I did not survive it. And after 15 years of marriage, our marriage ended. It was me and four kids and two dogs. And the journey continues. And I have gained an incredible support group, an amazing tribe. My sponsor is the most amazing human being that I know. She has sponsored me for 16 years. I wanted what she had when I reached out to her. She continues to be someone that I want. I want the recovery that she has. She has a level of humility and love that has made me feel safe in a way that the girl who was left on the doorstep never knew that she could feel that way. It's a sense of home here in Narcotics Anonymous that I always wanted, but like, I'm inside the snow globe now, you know? And it doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't happen just because. It requires work. It requires sitting in that uncomfortable sixth step and saying, okay, look, I'm not going to do this thing today, and I'm going to ask my higher power for help, and I'm going to change this shortcoming with the help of my higher power in the seventh step. And it's like, yo, eighth step, look at all this stuff I've done. And now I'm going to be humble enough to go share it and to clean up my side of the street and work that living the program IP in the 10th step, which kicked my butt. Like, my sponsor had me write that living the program IP every day for 30 days. And if I missed a day, I had to start over. I was on that freaking step for so darn long because I would fall asleep and then I'd wake up at 2 a.m. and go, oh my God, I missed a day. I had post-its all over the place in my bedroom that was like, don't forget. And then when I got to the 11th step, I remember saying to her, oh, I'm so glad I get to work this step because now I get to go like practice in all of these different religious institutions and learn so much about other cultures. And she was like, I don't know where you got that information from. She's like, this is not going to be a fun ride. And the 11th step came back to the third. And it really taught me about the difference between my will and my higher power's will and what it means to react and what it means to respond. And I love in the basic text, my favorite line in the basic text is in the 12th step where it says, the steps do not end here. The steps are a new beginning because the journey continues. because I will never graduate. I always have the ability to be better. And that's not to say that I'm not exactly perfectly in the place that I need to be right now in this moment. But it wasn't enough for me just to be clean. I wanted more. I wanted to love more. I wanted to be loved more. I just wanted more. And my life changed radically, and has consistently changed radically. It changed radically again 18 months ago when I moved from Los Angeles to Northern California. I closed a business that I had owned and been doing for 20 years. I left a marriage that once that door was closed, there was a giant, just a flood of betrayal and illusions that had been broken, and so much that I held on to that just wasn't true. And I get to continue to learn what it means to love unconditionally. I get to continue to learn what it means to trust. I have 4 kids. They are all over the place. They know where home is. I have had the pleasure of sponsoring. I can never be able to tell you guys the gift of what it means that the journey continues. But there is still so much more here. And my daughter was saying to me about how, living with our mom and then moving here with me and then moving again to Northern California, she said, I feel like I've had 3 different lives. And it really made me think about, like, we talk about we get to live 2 lives in 1 lifetime in Narcotics Anonymous, but like, I've had so many more. I've had so many other things. As I age, there are different phases of my life, and I become a different person based on what's relevant in my life. I was a super big PTA mama for a long time, and it's different now because my kids are older, but I'm still the mama. So that's it. I that's my experience. That's my story. That's how my journey continues. And it will continue on. And I am just so honored and so humbled to be with you guys tonight and to share all of that with you. And again, I just so appreciate the opportunity to share here. I think I didn't make it all the way to my time, but I did my very best. So thank you all so, so much. I'll be holding you all very close.